Congratulations, he said, to both of you.
For what?
Your second date.
Fourth, she said.
Really? Dinner last night, coffee break this morning, lunch break, dinner tonight. And it was your predicament that introduced us. So it's lovely you were passing by. It's like an omen.
That sounds bad.
Whatever the good version is.
A good omen, Carrington said.
I found Ryantown, Reacher said. It all matched up with the census. The occupation was listed as tin mill foreman, and the address was right across the street from a tin mill, which was mothballed for a spell, which explains why later he was laboring for the county. I assume he went back to being foreman when the mill started up again. I didn't look at the next census. My father had left home by then.
Carrington nodded and said nothing, in a manner Reacher thought deliberate and reluctant, as if actually he had plenty to say, but he wasn't going to, because of some fine point of manners or etiquette.
Reacher said,
What?
Nothing.
I don't believe you.
Okay, something.
What kind of something?
We were just discussing it.
On a date?
We're dating because of you. Obviously we're going to discuss it. No doubt we'll discuss your case forever. It will be of sentimental value.
What were you discussing?
We don't really know, Carrington said. We're a little embarrassed. We can't pin it down.
We looked at the original documents.
They're both lovely censuses. You develop a feel. You can see patterns. You can recognize the good takers and the lazy ones. You can spot mistakes. You can spot lies, mostly about reading and writing for men and age for women.
You found a problem with the documents?
No, Carrington said. They rang true. They were beautifully done, among the best I ever saw. The 1940 in particular was a Hall of Fame census. We believed every word.
Then it sounds pinned down pretty good to me.
Like I said, you develop a feel. You're in their world, right there with them. You become them through the documents. Except you know what happens next, and they don't. You stand a little apart. You know the end of the movie. So you're thinking like them, but you're also noticing which ones will be proved wise or foolish by future events.
And?
There's something wrong with the story you told me.
But not in the documents.
Some other part.
But you don't know what.
Can't pin it down.
Then the waitress came by and took their orders, and the conversation moved on to other things.
Reacher didn't turn it back. He didn't want to ruin their evening. He let them talk about whatever they felt like, and he joined in wherever he could.
He ate a main course only and got up to go. He wanted them to have dessert on their own. It seemed the least he could do. They didn't object. He made them take a 20. They said it was too much. He said, tell the waitress to keep the change. He stepped out the door and turned right, back the way he had come. The dark was noticeably darker. The streets were noticeably quieter. Traffic was light. No one was walking. The stores were all closed. A car came by from behind, and it drove on ahead. Maybe a little slower than it wanted to. Like nighttime cars in towns everywhere. Nothing to worry about, the back part of his brain told him, after computing 1,000 points of instinctive data about speed and direction and intent and consistency, and coming up with a result right in the center of normal. Then it saw something that wasn't. Headlights coming toward him. 100 yards away, big and blinding and spaced high and wide, a large vehicle, dead level, as if it was driving in the middle of the road, as if it was straddling the line, and it was driving slow, which is what rang the bell. Neither one speed or another, wrong for the context, like a cautious rush hour creep, but one click slower. As if the driver was also preoccupied with something else. A modern person might have guessed his phone, but Reacher thought the guy was searching for something, visually. hence the central position, hence the bright lights. He was sweeping both sidewalks at once. Searching for what? Or searching for who? It was a large vehicle, maybe a cop car. Cops were allowed to drive slow in the middle of the road. They were allowed to search for whatever or whoever they wanted. He was pinned by the lights. They washed over him, hard and blue and bright, and then they slid past him, and suddenly he was in a half-gray world, half-lit by the bright light's reflection off the night mist ahead. He turned and saw a pickup truck, high and shiny and handsome, immensely long, with two rows of seats and a long, long bed, and big chrome wheels turning slow, just rolling along, relaxed as can be. It was on the inside where the action was happening. It looked like an explosion of incredulous joy, like a crazy bet was paying out. The impossible had happened. Five faces were swiveling toward him. Five pairs of eyes were locked on his. Five mouths were open. One of them was moving. It was saying, "That's him." The guy with the moving mouth was the daddy from the apple farm. Chapter 21. The guy from the apple farm was in the second row behind the driver. Not a natural squad leader position. Not a throne of authority, like the front passenger seat. Maybe the guy saw himself more as an active duty soldier. Just one of the boys. Which was encouraging. It might indicate a low bar. At least a lowered average. Like looking at the opposition batting order, it was nice to know there was a guy you could get out. The other four were a generation younger. Not so different from the kid in the orchard. Same kind of build, same kind of muscle, same kind of tan. The same human species. But poorer. Different kind of grandfather. No one said life was fair. But they looked happy to help. Picking time was coming up. Maybe baby needed shoes. The truck squelched to a stop, and all four doors opened in a ragged sequence. Five men jumped down. Boots clattered on the blacktop. Two guys came around the hood and formed up shoulder to shoulder with the other three, with the older guy right in the middle, all of them gray and ghostly in the reflected half-light. They looked like a faded billboard for an old-time black-and-white movie. Some sentimental story. Maybe their mother died young and the old guy raised them all solo. Now they're grateful. Or now, for the first time ever, a fractured family is seeing eye to eye because of a terrible external threat. Some kind of dramatic hokum. They were acting it out. Reacher was thinking about Brenda Amos. We don't want trouble here. But she was talking about collateral damage, which in this case was likely to be very minor, even non-existent. The street was empty. There were no guns. There was no action at all. Not yet. Just a staring competition. And posing. Which Reacher guessed he was, too. He was acting relaxed and unconcerned, standing easy, almost smiling, but not quite, as if he had just found out an irksome task might need attention, before an otherwise excellent day came finally to a close. Opposite him, the other five were still giving it the full-on shoulder-to-shoulder thing, with high crossed arms and hard tilted up stares, and slowly it dawned on Reacher that their display was not, after all, intended to be seen as a narrative tableau, with a poignant implied backstory explaining their sudden new solidarity. It was intended to be seen as a much less subtle message. It was a raw statement of numbers. Nothing more. It was five against one. The guy from the apple farm said, "You need to come with us." Reacher said, "Do I?" "Best to come quietly." Reacher said nothing. The guy said, "Well?" I'm trying to figure out where that would fall on a scale of likelihood. Where 10 means it's extremely likely to happen, and 1 means it ain't going to happen in a million years. I have to tell you, Right now, the numbers popping up in my mind are all fairly small.
Your choice, the guy said. You could save yourself a couple of bruises, but you're coming with us one way or the other. You put your hands on my son.
Only one hand, Reacher said, and only briefly. Not much more than a tap. The kid's got a glass jaw. You should look after him better. You should explain to him why he can't play with the grown-ups. It's cruel not to. You're doing him a disservice.
The guy didn't answer. Reacher said, Are these new boys any better?
I sure hope so.
Or you need to explain to them, too.
This is the big leagues now. A ripple ran down the line, like a little spasm. Sharply drawn breaths rustled arms against chests, and jabbed glares jerked heads above shoulders.
We don't want trouble here.
Reacher said, We don't have to do this. The guy from the farm said, Yes, we do. This is a nice town. We shouldn't make a mess.
Then come with us.
Where to?
You'll see.
We already discussed that part. Right now, the likelihood is still close to zero. But hey, I'm open to offers. You could sweeten the deal.
What?
You could pay me. Or offer me something.
We're offering you the chance to save yourself a couple of extra bruises.
Reacher nodded. You mentioned that before, he said. It raised a number of questions. He looked left and right and back again at the four younger guys. He asked, Where were you born?
None of them answered.
You should tell me, he said. It's important to your futures.
Around here, one of them said.
And then you grew up around here?
Yes.
Not Southie or the Bronx or South Central L.A.?
No.
Not in a shanty town outside of Rio de Janeiro, or in Baltimore or Detroit?
No.
Any law enforcement experience?
No.
Have you done time in prison?
No.
Any military service?
No.
Any secret clandestine training by Mossad, or the SAS in Britain, or the French Foreign Legion?
No.
You understand this is going to be different than picking apples, right?
The boy didn't answer.
Reacher turned back to the guy from the apple farm.
See the problem? He said. This whole thing with the bruises just doesn't work.
It has no internal logic. It's an optical illusion. You're offering the absence of something you can't deliver anyway.
Not with this crew.
You need to do better than that. Use your imagination. An inducement is required. Maybe a large cash payment would be tempting. Or the keys to the truck. Or maybe one of these boys could introduce me to his sister. Just one night. He could tear himself away.
Obviously, Reacher knew they would all react, which was exactly what he wanted. But he didn't know which one of them would react first and fastest, so he stayed loose, already winding up his countermeasures, but keeping his aim flexible as long as he could, hoping he would know before the point of no return, when finally he had to commit to a direction. And he did, because the kid to the left of center started forward a foot ahead of the others, enraged by the abuse and derision. So Reacher lined him up and threw his punch. Legend had it the fastest hands in boxing could move at 30 miles an hour, much faster than Reacher, who was happy with 20. But even at that slower speed, his fist crossed the yard of air in front of him in a tenth of a second. Virtually instantaneous, it hit the kid in the face, and then Reacher snapped it back just as fast. Like a crisp parade ground move, and he stood upright and easy, like nothing had happened. Like you had blinked and missed it. Just for the drama. The kid fell down.
50 yards away, Elizabeth Castle and Carter Carrington stepped out of the bistro. He said something, and she laughed. The sound was loud in the empty street. The guys from the truck turned to look. Not the guy on the ground. He wasn't doing anything. 50 yards away, Carrington took Elizabeth Castle's hand. And they turned together and set out walking, head on, approaching. They were lit flat and bright by the stopped truck's lights, like Reacher had been. He watched them for a second, and then he turned to the farm guy and said, "Now you got a choice of your own. The city attorney is coming. A credible witness, if nothing else. I'm prepared to stick around and slug it out. Are you?" The guy from the farm glanced down the street, at the approaching couple, all lit up, now 40 yards away. Their heels were loud on the brick. Elizabeth Castle laughed again. The guy from the farm said nothing. Reacher nodded. "I understand," he said. "You don't like letting things go, because you're the top dog. I get it. So I'll make it easy for you. I'll make sure we meet again. Tomorrow, or the next day. One day soon. I'll come back to Ryantown. I'm sure I'll want to. Keep an eye out for me." He walked away. He didn't look back. Behind him, he heard nothing for a second, and then he heard muttered commands and scuffling feet, and the truck backing up, and thumps and gasps as the groggy guy was hauled up off the ground and stuffed in a seat. He heard a door slam. Then he turned in on a side street and heard nothing more, all the way back to his room, where he stayed the rest of the night. He caught most of a meaningless late-season Red Sox game out of Boston, and then the late local news, and then he went to bed, where he slept soundly, until 3:01 in the morning. Chapter 22 Patty was still awake at 3:01 in the morning, having not slept at all. Shorty had kept her company most of the time, but finally he had closed his eyes. "Just a nap," he said, which had so far lasted an hour. He was snoring. They had eaten the fourth of their 6 meals. They had drunk the fourth of their 6 bottles of water. They had 2 of everything left, breakfast and lunch the next day. Then what? She didn't know, which was why she was still awake at 3:01 in the morning, having not slept at all. She didn't understand. They were in a warm and comfortable room, with electricity and hot and cold running water. There was a shower and a toilet. There were towels and soap and tissues. They had not been assaulted, or abused, or threatened, or leered at, or touched, or treated inappropriately in any way, apart from being locked up against their will. Why? What was the reason? What was the purpose? Who was she, and who was Shorty in the grand scheme of things? What good were they to anybody? She took the question seriously. They were poor, and everyone they knew was poor. A ransom note would be a joke. They knew no industrial secrets. They had no specialized knowledge. People had been growing potatoes and sawing wood in North America for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Both processes were pretty much figured out by that point. So why? They were 25 and healthy. For a time, she thought about organ harvesting. Maybe their kidneys were about to be auctioned on the internet, or their hearts, or their lungs, or their corneas, plus whatever else was good. Bone marrow, maybe? The whole long list, like on their driver's licenses. But then she thought not. No attempt had been made to check their blood types. No casual questions. No accidental nicks or scrapes or cuts. No first aid. No blood-stained gauze. You couldn't sell a kidney without a blood type. It was the kind of thing people needed to know. She relaxed for a moment, but not for long. She didn't understand. Who was she, and who was Shorty? What were they good for? Reacher woke up at 3:01 in the morning. Same deal. He snapped awake instantly, like flicking a switch. Same reason. A sound, which he didn't hear again. Nothing. He padded naked out of bed and checked the alley through the window. Nothing. No glint of raccoon. No ghost-like coyote. No eager dog. A quiet night. Except apparently not, and once again at exactly 3:01 in the morning. He doubted the cocktail waitress would have gone to work that night. Probably fired, or afraid of reprisals. And a new gig in a new place wouldn't have gotten her home at precisely the same time. Plus, the kid wasn't waiting at her door anymore. He was in the hospital. Plus, now the alley where she lived was more than 4 blocks away, on a diagonal with plenty of stuff in between. Outside the radius, he wasn't close enough for a cry to carry. Therefore, the timing was a coincidence. He heard Amos's voice in his head. They'll mobilize before midnight. They'll be here by morning. The distances are not great. Was it morning? Technically, he supposed. He pictured midnight in Boston, and a car gassing up and slipping away in the dark. Could it be in Laconia 3 hours and 1 minute later? Easily. Probably 2 times over. He pictured the guy taking his time, prowling, getting the lay of the land, maybe rousing a clerk or an innkeeper here or there, asking his question about a big guy with a cut hand, apologizing when the answer was no, shoving a 50 in a shirt pocket, moving on, back to the car, looking for the next place. Until sooner or later, he found the innkeeper who would say, sure, top floor, the room in the back. Reacher pulled his pants out from under the mattress and put them on. He buttoned his shirt and laced his shoes. He collected his toothbrush from the bathroom glass, and he put it in his pocket. He was good to go. He walked downstairs to the lobby, still 3 hours before the buffet. He waited inside the street door and listened. He heard nothing. He stepped out. He heard the swish of a distant car. He saw no one. He walked to the corner. Nothing there. He heard the car again. Same sound. Different position. Far away. Then nearer. As if it had turned in 1 block closer, going nowhere in particular, just around and around, on a new, tighter radius. For the sake of it, Reacher walked the 4 diagonal blocks and found the alley between the bag store and the shoe store, where the waitress lived. It was all quiet. No one was there. No disturbance. Just dark, blank windows, and mist, and silence. He heard the car again, behind him, in the distance. The faint hiss of its tires, the breathing of its engine, a puck as it hit a join in the blacktop. 3 blocks away, he thought. No direct line of sight. There was a dog leg in the cross street. He turned back toward the inn. He walked through cones of yellow light. Once he stopped in the shadows and listened. He could still hear the car, rolling slow, still 3 blocks away, turning right every now and then, going around and around. He walked on. The car stepped another block closer. It turned right 1 street early. Now it was only 2 blocks away, going around and around. A giant map-sized spiral. A search pattern. But a lazy one. It proved nothing. There could be a whole football team of big guys with cut hands running around, and a slow spiral could miss every one of them every time. Not missing one of them would be a random chance. Therefore, maybe not a search pattern. Not yet. Maybe still a lay of the land reconnaissance. It was still very early. Thorough preparations were always to be recommended. A degree of professionalism could be anticipated. Exit routes could be planned. Difficult turns could be noted. Alleys could be inspected for width and destination. The car turned right, 2 blocks behind him. He walked on. 2 blocks to go, which presented a problem with 4 dimensions. Where would he be when the car next passed close to the inn? Where would the car be when he arrived at its door? Which was the same question. Time and distance and direction. Like deflection shooting. Where will the running man be when the bullet gets there? He stopped walking. The timing was going to be wrong. Better to wait it out a quarter turn. Better to get there right after the guy drove on, not right before he was due to arrive. Common sense, surely. He strolled to the corner and waited. The street was deserted, still the dead of night. All good. Except right then the car chose to step in another block closer. Way early, compared to its previous pattern. Not remotely predictable. It came rolling down the cross street on Reacher's left, with its bright lights on, sweeping both sidewalks at once. Reacher was lit up like a movie star. The car stopped 15 feet away. Idling engine, blinding light. Behind it, a door opened. Reacher planned to dive down and to the right of the sound, but forward, into the light, safer that way. The guy was probably right-handed. A panic spasm caused by the sudden dive would jerk his gun up and away, not down and in. If he had a gun. Behind the light, a voice said, "Laconia Police Department." Then it said, "Raise your hands." "I can't see you," Reacher said. "Kill the lights." Which was a test of sorts. A real cop might, and a fake cop wouldn't. He was still planning on the dive to the right. Then any kind of contact with the open door would get the job done. It would smack back into the guy, and after that, it would be a fair fight. The lights went out. Reacher blinked a couple of times, and the yellow nighttime glow came back, soft through the misty air, harsh where the streets were wet. The car was a Laconia PD black and white, clean and new, glowing orange inside with technology. The guy behind its open door was in a patrolman's uniform. His nameplate said Davison. He was maybe in his middle 20s, maybe a little skinnier than he wanted to be. But bright and alert and resolved. His creases were crisp. His hair was brushed. His equipment belt was in excellent order. He was ready. For once, a routine night patrol had turned out interesting. "Raise your hands," he said again. "Not really necessary," Reacher said. "Then turn around and I'll cuff you." "Not really necessary either." "It's for your safety as well as mine," Davison said. Which Reacher figured had to come from a role-play class, maybe led by a psychologist. Maybe the task of the day was to find a line that could inhibit further resistance simply by stunning vital cortexes in the brain with its blatant opacity. How could putting him in handcuffs help his safety? But out loud he said, "Officer, I don't see a lot of probable cause here." Davison said, "None is required." "Was there a constitutional crisis I didn't hear about?" "You're already a person of interest. You were mentioned in the starter watch briefing. A sketch was distributed. You're not supposed to be seen in public." "Who conducted the briefing?" "Detective Amos." "What else did she say?" "Report immediately if we see a Massachusetts license plate." "Did you?" "Not yet." "She's taking it seriously," Reacher said. "She has to. We can't let anything bad happen. We'll be crucified." "I'm heading back to my hotel now." "No, sir, you need to come with me." "Am I under arrest?" "Sir, Detective Amos informed us of your prior service in the MPs. We're happy to extend every courtesy." "Yes or no?" "You're about an inch away," the kid said, bright and alert and resolved, and sure of himself, and sure of his orders, and the law, and his bosses. Happy days. Reacher thought about coffee, nearly 3 hours in the future, in the innkeeper's lobby. No doubt an ever-present fixture in the police station. "An arrest won't be necessary," he said. "I'll ride with you of my own free will. But in the front, call it a rule." They got in the car and they drove on, at the same speed Reacher had heard in the distance, slow and deliberate, nosing around corners, dutifully completing whichever lap it was of the night-long patrol. Reacher's seat was cramped by an overspill of equipment from the center console. There was a laptop computer on a gooseneck stalk. There were holders and holsters for small specialist items. The vinyl on the dash was shiny and clean. The air smelled new. The car could have been a month old. Then whichever lap it was on ended, and Davison turned a corner near the city office and set out on a wider street in a direction that Reacher recognized led to the station. A straight shot, about half a mile. Davison drove it a little faster than before, with panache, with a certain swagger, the master of the nighttime universe. He pulled in outside the lobby doors. He got out. Reacher got out. They went inside together. Davison explained the situation to the night guy, who was unclear on only one point. He said, "Until 9:30, do I need to lock him up?" Davison looked at Reacher. He said, "Does he?" "Not really necessary." "You sure?" "I don't want anything bad to happen either. All I want is coffee." Davison turned back to the night guy. He said, "Find him an office to wait in, and get him a cup of coffee." Then ahead of them, the double doors swung open, and Brenda Amos walked through. "We'll use my office," she said. Chapter 23. The first arrival happened well before dawn. A repeat customer. He lived in the far northern part of Maine, in a wooden house in the center of 80 square miles of forest, all of which he owned. As always, he drove only by night, in a beat-up old Volvo wagon, not worth a second glance, but just in case it got one. It was also fitted with fake Vermont plates made up with an unissued number. His phone told him where to turn, but of course, he remembered the place anyway. From his first visit. How could he forget? He recognized the mouth of the track, and the sketchy blacktop, and the fat rubber wire, which rang a bell somewhere to scare up a welcome, which this time was offered in the motel office, by Mark only. The others were nowhere to be seen. Watching the security cameras, the new guest assumed, and hoped. Mark offered him room 3, and he took it. Mark watched him as he parked the wagon, watched him as he carried his bags inside. He was wondering which bag held his money, the new guest assumed. He set his stuff down near the closet and stepped outside again, to the pre-dawn darkness, to the soft, misty air. He couldn't contain himself. He crept along the boardwalk, past room 4, past 5, toward a dead-looking Honda Civic, crouching blackly in the moonlight. He stepped out into the lot at that point and looped around behind it, so he could take in the whole of room 10 from a distance. The first look. It was occupied. The email said so. But it was currently blank and quiet. The window blind was down. There was no light inside. No sound. Nothing was happening. The new guest stood for a minute. And then he walked back to room 3. Reacher took coffee from the squad room pot, and then Amos walked him back to her office. The same as before. The old structure, the new contents. The desk, the chairs, the cabinets, the computer. She said, "I asked you to play it safe for my sake." He said, "Something woke me up." "Is there a law that says therefore automatically you have to get up?" "Sometimes." "They could have been arriving right then." "Exactly. I thought I should at least get my pants on. Then I went out to take a look. Nothing doing, except an excellent performance from Patrolman Davison, with which I had no problem. I'm happy to wait here. All good. Except I'm sorry you had to get up early." "Yeah, me too," Amos said. "You also went out for dinner." "How do you know?" he asked. "Take a guess." Because of blood on the street, he thought, or a random traffic stop a block or two later. Or both. The guys from the apple farm. Had to be. But out loud, he said, "I don't know." "Carter Carrington told us," she said, "you walked 8 blocks to the same bistro he was in, and 8 blocks back. That wasn't playing it safe." "At the time, I thought it was, in a roundabout way." "You should have called me. I gave you my card. I would have brought pizza to your room.
Why did you ask Carrington about me?
We didn't. We needed a legal opinion. Your dinner plans came up in the subsequent conversation.
What kind of legal opinion?
Who we can detain before they've actually done anything wrong.
And what was the answer?
These days? Practically anybody.
Maybe no one is coming, Reacher said. The kid was an asshole.
No chance whatsoever.
Okay. But maybe it's not top of their list. Maybe they have to pick up the dry cleaning first. I'll be out of here at 9:30. They'll find me gone.
I sincerely hope every part of what you just said is true.
Let's hope some of it is.
We got some news, she said, slightly encouraging for us. Not so much for you.
What is it?
Current thinking has downgraded the risk of drive-by casualties. Now we think they're somewhat unlikely. Chief Shaw was on the phone with the Boston PD. They think the attempt will not be made here. They think their preferred tactic will be to get you in their car so they can drive you back to Boston, where they'll throw you off an apartment building. That's what they do. Like a signature. Like a press release. Makes a splash in every way. I would prefer that didn't happen to you.
Are you worried about me?
Purely as a professional responsibility. I won't get in the strange man's car, Reacher said. I think I can pretty much guarantee that. Amos didn't reply. Her door opened a crack and a head stuck in and said, Ma'am, we have reports on the radio of a Massachusetts plate incoming from the southwest on a black Chrysler 300 sedan, which according to Mass DMV seems to be registered to a freight forwarding operation based out of Logan Airport in Boston. What are the demographics on a black Chrysler 300?
Some limo companies, some rentals, but definitely a go-to gangster car.
Where is it now?
Still south of downtown, with a squad car right behind it.
Can he see inside?
The windows are tinted.
Dark enough to pull him over.
Ma'am, we can play this any way you tell us.
Amos said, Not yet. Stay with him. Make it obvious. Show the flag.
The head ducked out, and the door closed again.
So, Amos said, Here we go.
Not yet, Reacher said. Not with this guy.
How many more clues do you need?
That's my point, Reacher said.
It's a big black sedan with tinted windows. It's a shiny object. It's immediately traceable back to Boston. It's owned by a freight forwarding company at a major international airport. It might as well carry a neon sign. It's a decoy. They want you to follow it. It's going to drive around all day at exactly 29 miles an hour. It's going to signal every turn, and you can bet your ass its taillights are in working order. Meanwhile, the real guy is in an electrician's van, or a plumber, or flowers, or whatever. We have to assume a certain amount of common sense. The real guy is going to slip into town sometime today, and no one is going to notice. But hopefully after 9:30 in the morning. Because that would make sense anyway. By then you'll have been on a war footing more than 6 hours. You'll be getting tired. He'll know that. He'll wait. I'll be long gone.
We're basing a lot on your friend from yesterday actually showing up again.
I guess we are.
Will he?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised either way. He was that kind of guy.
On time?
Same answer.
What if he doesn't show up? You'll be here all day. That's the exact scenario I promised Shaw I wouldn't let happen.
Reacher nodded.
I don't want to put you on the spot, he said. I apologize if I already have.
I'll give my guy 30 minutes. That's all. If he doesn't show by 10 o'clock, you can drive me to the city limit yourself.
Does that work?
And then what?
Then Shaw is happy. I'll be outside the jurisdiction.
It's a line on the map. You could be followed. Electricians go from job to job. Also plumbers and flower delivery. But at least the county will be stuck with the paperwork, not the city.
Your risk, I guess.
No, the electrician's risk. He's going to be the paperwork, not me.
What choice do I have? I can't send him home to Boston with a pat on the back and a candy bar.
Not under these circumstances. That would give the wrong impression entirely.
They'll send a replacement.
They'll send two.
That will be the county's problem, not yours.
You shouldn't stick around.
I don't want to, Reacher said. Believe me, I like to keep moving. But on the other hand, I don't like to be chased away, especially not by people who plan to throw me off a building, which strikes me as ambitious. They seem awful sure of themselves, like I'm just a detail.
Don't let ego get in the way of a good decision.
You just trashed every general in our nation's history. You weren't a general. Don't make the same mistake.
I won't, Reacher said. I doubt if I'll get the chance. I doubt if our paths will ever cross. I'll be gone in a day, 2 days max. The kid will heal up. All will be forgotten by the holidays. Life will move on. Hopefully I'll be somewhere warm.
Amos didn't answer. Her door opened again, the same crack, and the same head stuck in and said, "The black Chrysler is now cruising downtown, with no apparent destination in mind. So far obeying all traffic laws, and the squad car is still behind it." The head withdrew, and the door closed.
"Decoy," Reacher said. "When will the real guy get here?"
He didn't answer.
The second arrival had many more moving parts than the first. It was a whole big production. Peter drove his Mercedes SUV to a small airfield near Manchester. Not even executive aviation, more of a hobby field. No tower, no log, no reporting requirements at all. He parked inside the fence, level with the end of the runway. He waited, with his window down. 5 minutes later, he heard the distant clatter of a propeller plane. In the far distance, he saw winks of light in the pale dawn sky. A twin-engine Cessna, that kind of thing, hopping and jumping, weightless on the wind. It came in low, and landed, and slowed immediately to a fussy, bustling, land-bound scurry, like a nervous bird, roaring with noise. Peter flashed his lights, and it rolled on toward him. It was an air taxi out of Syracuse, New York, booked by a shell corporation owned by a nest of 10 others, on behalf of a passenger who had an Illinois driver's license in the name of Hogan. He had arrived in Syracuse moments earlier in a charter Gulfstream out of Houston, Texas, booked by a different shell corporation owned by a different nest of 10 others, on behalf of a passenger with a California license in the name of Hurahan. Neither license was real, and no one knew where he had come in from prior to the wheels up in Houston. He climbed down from the plane, and Peter helped him put his stuff in the Mercedes, 3 soft bags and 2 hard cases. The money was in one of the soft bags, Peter assumed. The contribution. A physical weight, even in hundreds. The plane shuddered around in place, a deafening half-circle, and then it blared away down the runway and into the air. Peter drove the other way, out the gate, left and right along the back roads. The new arrival sat beside him in the front passenger seat. He looked excited. He was sweating a little. He wanted to say something. Peter could tell. But he didn't. Not at first. He didn't speak at all. He stared ahead through the windshield and rocked in his seat. Small movements, sometimes back and forth, sometimes side to side. But eventually, he had to know. He had to ask. He said, "What are they like?"
"They're perfect," Peter said.
Chapter 24. Dawn came up bright and clear, and a patrolman came by to take breakfast orders from a diner 2 blocks down the street. Reacher chose a fried egg sandwich. 10 minutes later, it arrived, still hot in greasy aluminum foil. It tasted pretty good. Maybe a little rubbery. Nutritious, anyway. Protein, carbohydrate, grease. All the food groups. He got more coffee from the squad room pot. No one was in there. Day watch was an hour away. There was a feed from the radio room playing softly through a speaker on someone's empty desk. Reacher went closer and listened. There were slow blasts of static, like breathing, and call signs and code words and addresses that meant nothing. But he caught the drift. A dispatcher was talking to two separate squad cars. The dispatcher was probably down the hall, and the squad cars seemed to be circling the center of town. One of them seemed to be right behind the Chrysler, and the other seemed to be tracking them both from a block away. Reacher figured the regular night watch would be just one car. They were spending overtime money. A voice that could have been Davison's broke in and said, "Now he's in the drive-through lane for coffee." "That's good," the dispatcher said. "It means sooner rather than later he'll need to take a leak. Maybe you can get a look at him." No need, Reacher thought. He would be about 5'10 tall and 5'9 wide in a dark cashmere overcoat and a pink button-down shirt with greasy black hair slicked back and aviator shades and a gold chain around his neck. Like central casting. Whatever caught the eye. Then a new voice said, "The cameras at the highway Cloverleaf show a Massachusetts plate heading our way. On a dark blue panel van. A Persian carpet cleaning company out of Boston. If it doesn't turn off, it's about 10 minutes away." "Back burner," the dispatcher said. "We're going to get plenty of clutter. We're going to get FedEx and UPS and all kinds of things." The static breathed in and out. Reacher had seen Persian carpets, mostly in old houses, or rich houses, or old rich houses. He knew they were expensive. He knew they were often treasured heirlooms. Therefore, cleaning them was a delicate matter. Experts were no doubt few and far between. So it was immediately plausible that a discerning customer in Laconia would need to send to Boston for a satisfactory service. Pickup and drop-off included, no doubt, in the same all-in-one delicate and expert price. All good. Except. He topped up his coffee and headed back to Amos's office. She was at her desk with her hand on the phone, as if she had just put it down, or couldn't remember who she wanted to call. He said, "I heard the radio in the squad room." She nodded. "I got an update," she said. "The decoy is getting drive-through coffee." And a blue van came off the highway. "That too." "Got an opinion?" "It's a van," she said. "I can think of 100 reasons why it's okay." 99, Reacher said. "What's wrong with it?" "How many Persian carpets have you seen?"
"A few."
"Where?"
"An old lady we used to visit, in a big old house. We were told to call her an aunt. We weren't allowed to touch anything."
"Exactly. An old biddy. A rich old fuss budget. No doubt very organized. Probably she gets her mahogany polished at the same time her rug is out for cleaning. Which happens every time the latest Labrador dies. When she also has her great-grandmother's china washed. What's the earliest time of day such a grand New Hampshire lady would be prepared to receive tradespeople at her door?" Amos said nothing. "The van is too early," Reacher said. "That's what's wrong with it. It's just after dawn. It's not making a customer call in Laconia."
"Want me to have it stopped?"
"I don't care," Reacher said. "I'll survive either way. But if it's the guy, you could get a nice bust out of it. He's got to be carrying. Probably a big shotgun, if he seriously expects me to get in the van with him." "You're about the size of a rolled-up rug," she said, "from a big room. Maybe this is how they move people now, since the new cars came out with the smaller trunks." Reacher didn't know if she was kidding or not. "Up to you," he said. "Taking a look might put your mind at rest. I would need a SWAT team if you're right about the shotgun." Reacher didn't answer. She thought for a moment, and then she picked up the phone. She said to whoever answered, Keep eyes on the blue van from the carpet cleaner. Let me know where it goes. An hour later, the workday was fully underway. The new watch was in. The station was bustling and crowded. Reacher kept out of the way. He heard a patchwork of news, some of it from the radio feed, which was still playing softly, and some of it from people calling out updates to each other, desk to desk across busy rooms, and some of it by eavesdropping on hurried corridor conversations. The decoy in the Chrysler was still driving around, ostentatiously legal, taking scrupulous care at every four-way, yielding and deferring to pedestrians and local drivers every chance he got. He had not yet stopped for gas, or the bathroom. Opinion was divided as to which was the more impressive feat. But they had lost the blue van. By then they had three squad cars out, one behind the Chrysler, and two patrolling the southern approaches, and the van had been seen once, but not again. Opinion was divided between two competing theories. Either the van had parked in a carefully hidden location, perhaps an alley or a courtyard, which automatically made it suspicious, or else it had driven straight through town and exited to the northwest, perhaps to service an address in a close-by community, which automatically didn't. Reacher wondered if the apple farmer had a Persian carpet in his house. Amos said, "It's nearly time for you to go." He said, "Maybe I'll walk through a couple of alleys and courtyards." "You won't walk through anywhere. I'm going to drive you. In a marked car. No one would be dumb enough to attack a police vehicle." "Are you worried about me?" "Purely in an operational sense. I want you out of here, definitively, once and for all. No delays. Because then my problem is solved. For avoidance of doubt, I want to see it happen with my own eyes. Maybe after that you should go stop the decoy and let him know it's all over. He might be grateful. He must be desperate for a leak by now." "Maybe I will." "You could tell him which way I went. Tell him I'd like to meet him. And his pal in the van." "Let it go," she said. "This ain't the MPs anymore." "Is that how you feel?" "Mostly," she said. She made a couple of arrangements on the phone, and then she grabbed her bag and led Reacher out to the lot, where she chose a black and white still wet from the car wash. The keys were in it. Reacher rode in the front, cramped by the laptop and the custom compartments. He gave her directions to the corner before the side street where the inn was, where he had gotten out the day before. All the way there he watched the traffic. Didn't see a blue van. Didn't see a black Chrysler either. There was a late rush hour jam at one of the lights. Amos checked her watch. Getting close. She lit up her roof bar and slipped through in the wrong lane. And there, dead ahead, was the ancient Subaru, waiting at the curb, on the right spot, at the right time. Inside was a familiar skinny silhouette, blue denim, a pencil neck, and a long gray ponytail. "Is that him?" Amos asked. "Sure is," Reacher said. "Maybe I did something good in a previous life." She pulled in behind the Subaru. The silhouette jerked its head, like it was suddenly staring in the mirror. Then the Subaru took off, instantly. It disappeared out from in front of them. It howled off the curb and blasted down the street. Maximum acceleration. Amos said, "What?" "Chase him," Reacher said. "Go, go, go." She glanced over her shoulder and stamped on the gas and took off in pursuit. She said, "What just happened?" "You scared him," Reacher said. "Your red lights were still on, like you were pulling him over." "He was stationary." "Maybe he thought you were busting him." "Why would I? Was he on a hydrant?" "Maybe he's got weed in the car, or secret documents, or something. Maybe he thinks you're an agent of deep state oppression. We're dealing with an old guy with a ponytail here." They followed him 100 yards behind, then 80, then 50, then 20. The Subaru was doing its valiant best, but it was no match for a modern-day police vehicle, with lights and a siren, Then up ahead, the Subaru turned right. It was lost to sight for 10 or 12 agonizing seconds, but they turned after it and saw it turning again at the end of the block.
"He's heading home," Reacher said. "Somewhere north and west of here."
Amos took a shortcut on a block she knew better and came out right on the Subaru's bumper, a one-way street. Up ahead was a red light and another small jam. 2 lanes of traffic, 5 cars on the left and 6 on the right. The tail end of rush hour. The light went green, but nobody moved. Someone was blocking the box. Not a blue van. Not a black Chrysler. The Subaru braked hard and swerved into the shorter line. Now he was the 6th car on the left, 1 inch behind the 5th. Amos stopped 1 inch behind him. On his left was the sidewalk, and on his right was the right-hand queue of vehicles, just as long, just as stopped. He was parked tighter than Paris. Amos said, "Technically, he committed a number of offenses."
"Let it go," Reacher said, "and thanks for everything."
He got out of the car and walked ahead. He tapped on the Subaru's passenger window. The old guy stared ahead for a long moment, absolutely refusing to look, rigid with principle. But eventually, and reluctantly, he glanced to his right. At which point he looked very surprised. He glanced back at the flashing lights. He was confused. He didn't understand. Reacher opened the door and got in the car.
"She gave me a ride," he said. "That's all.
She didn't mean to startle you." Up ahead, the light cycled back to green, and this time the traffic moved. The guy drove forward with one eye on his mirror. Behind him, Amos pulled a wide U-turn around the light and headed back the way she had come. Reacher turned in his seat and watched her go. The old guy said, "Why would a cop give you a ride?"
"Protective custody," Reacher said. "The folks from the apple farm were in town last night."
The explanation seemed to settle the guy. He nodded.
"I told you," he said, "that family doesn't let things go."
"Back there," Reacher said, "you shouldn't have run."
"Not a smart tactic. The cops will always get you in the end."
"Were you a cop?"
"In the army," Reacher said, "long ago."
"I know I shouldn't have run," the guy said, "but it's an old habit."
He said nothing more. He just drove on. Reacher watched the traffic. No blue van. They made a left and a right. They seemed to be heading north and west, toward the apple farm itself. And Ryantown. That general area.
Reacher said, "Did you make the arrangements?"
"They're expecting us."
"Thank you."
"Visiting hours start at 10.
"Great.
The old man's name is Mr. Mortimer."
"Good to know," Reacher said.
They found the main drag out of town, and 2 miles later turned left, on the road Reacher had seen the day before, the road that led to the place with no water. They followed it west, through woods, past fields. Reacher watched out his window. In the far distance on his right lay Bruce Jones's acres, with his 12 dogs, and then came the orchards, and Ryantown itself, overgrown and ghostly.
He said, "How much further?"
"Nearly there," the guy said. 2 miles later, on the left, Reacher saw a shape, way far in the distance. Some kind of a new development. Long, low buildings, laid out in a virgin field. There were crisp blacktop roads with bright white markings. There were newly planted trees, looking pale and slender and delicate, next to their natural gnarly neighbors. The buildings were bland stucco, with metal windows and white aluminum rainwater pipes that kinked at the bottom and ran away to spouts a yard into the grass. There was a sign at the main entrance, something about assisted living.
"This is it," the old guy said.
The clock in Reacher's head hit 10 exactly.
The third arrival was as stealthy and self-contained as the first. The gentleman in question drove himself from a large house in a small town in a rural region of Pennsylvania. Initially, he was in a car reported scrapped in western New York 4 months previously. He had prepared well ahead of time. He believed preparedness was everything. The whole journey had been rehearsed, over and over in his mind. He had looked for snags and problems. He wanted to be ready. He had two overarching aims. He didn't want to be caught, and he didn't want to be late. The plan was about anonymity, of course, and cutouts, and untraceability. Had to be. Stage one was to drive non-stop in the paperless car to a friend's place in back of a service station off the Mass Pike, just west of Boston. He knew the guy from a different community, a different shared interest, a tight, passionate group of guys, secret and embattled, loyal and helpful. They made a point of it, like a fetish. What a fellow member wanted, a fellow member got. No questions asked. The friend's day job was trading commercial vehicles. He bought them at auction after they came off lease, for resale. They came and went, clean and dirty, used and abused, banged up and not a scratch. On any given day, he had a couple dozen around. On that particular day, he had three clear favorites. All panel vans, all ordinary, all invisible. No one paid attention to a panel van. A panel van was a hole in the air. The best example was tidy in appearance and dark blue in color, with gold sign writing. It had come in not long before as a repo from a bankrupt carpet cleaner in the city. Once a very upscale operation by the look of it. Persian rugs. Hence the gold sign writing and the high standard of maintenance. The man from Pennsylvania loaded his stuff in it and started it up. He set the GPS on his phone. He drove north. The route took him on the highway for a spell, then off near Manchester, New Hampshire, and onward to the back of beyond, through a small town named Laconia. Where he got scared. Where he nearly quit. He saw two cop cars, clearly eyeballing everyone coming in from the south. Searching. Staring at him. As if they knew all about him ahead of time. As if someone had dropped a dime. He panicked and pulled over in an alley and stopped in a loading bay behind a store. He checked his email. His secret account on his secret phone. The webmail page, with the translations in the foreign alphabets. There was no cancellation message. No warnings. No alerts. He took a deep breath. He knew the scene. Any such community had a failsafe. An emergency one-click button. First thing to get to, guaranteed, no matter what else was going down. It would generate an automatic message, maybe innocuous, to be on the safe side, but to be understood as a code. The children are under the weather today. Something like that. There was no such message. He checked again. No message. He backed out of the alley and drove on. He was quickly out of town. He didn't see the police cars again. He relaxed. Straight away, he felt better. In fact, he felt good. He felt he was earning it. He was facing dangers. He drove through woods and past horse fields and cow fields. On his left, a shallow turn led away through apple orchards, but his phone said not to take it. He kept on straight, 10 more open miles, and then the woods came back for another 10. The van rushed along, almost brushing the trees. They met overhead. It was a green and secret world. Then his phone told him the final turn was fast approaching, in half a mile on the left.